honestly expected a nice, relaxing blowout win over the Carolina Panthers, then I hope you enjoyed your first Kansas City Chiefs game yesterday. For everybody else, yeah, that seems about right. Welcome to the Josh Briscoe Show here on 96.5 The Fan. I am, in fact, Josh Briscoe. James Howell producing the effort on the other side of the glass. And look, this has levels to it, as it often does. But for me personally, on behalf of good narratives and healthier discussion around this sport of football, I have a silver lining from this game. I think the Chiefs have some silver linings from this game. And then, of course, yes, the silver linings imply the presence of a cloud. And there were several clouds from yesterday's game as well. But my personal silver lining is that usually we fight about this thing. We fight about good win, bad win, good loss, bad loss. The result's the only thing that matters. The process does, in fact, matter in its own right. We debate that type of thing all the time. I have hosted a lot of post-game shows. Sometimes the Chiefs win and it wasn't good enough. Sometimes they win and it was so good that even discussing the details sounds like you're being a hater. There's always wiggle room in that. The truth always lies somewhere in the middle. But I do think that we pretty unanimously found the common ground to unite on. The freaking Panthers. That's what it took. I saw a stat earlier today that Bryce Young had 5 big-time throws charted for his entire season going into yesterday's game, and then put up 5 big-time throws against the Chiefs. We can talk about the Chiefs not getting enough pressure with 4 against Josh Allen, but when they can't get to the guy who's been benched for Andy Dalton this year, we can all begin to assess the shortcomings, no pun intended, at Bryce Young's expense. That was a genuine accidental pun. The interesting thing, and I think the good thing, holistically speaking here, is that it sure seems like the players felt similarly to how you felt yesterday. Hearing Trey Smith and Nick Bolton talk earlier today, it sounds like they probably feel today much like you do. But the one audio clip that I think tells the most story of any of these over the last couple of days, it wasn't any press conference comment after the games last night. It wasn't anything that Bolton or Smith said today. It's nothing anybody else said today, analyzing it all. The Chiefs put out a clip after the game of Andy Reid addressing the team in the locker room. Listen to what he says, listen to the way he says it, and tell me if this doesn't sound like maybe the message you needed to hear at this time. Here's Andy Reid talking to the Chiefs in the locker room after the game.
All right, so look, I don't want to see anybody hanging their head, man. This league is crazy. That's the way this thing goes. You saw it yesterday with college football. Nothing's given to you. And you're getting their best shot. So you keep your heads up, man. And we get this thing rolling. Right? We got some things we got to clean up, but we keep it rolling here. That's the important part. Winning is the important part right here. And you guys bear down and got it done. All right, let's give it 1 Chiefs here. How about those Chiefs?
If we would have cut that off 10 seconds earlier, you could have blindfolded me, spun me in a circle, and said, was this coming after a win or a loss? And I'd say, oh, that's a losing locker room. That is Andy Reid giving an encouraging message to a locker room that's down on itself a little bit. Hey, don't hang your heads. I don't want to see your head hanging. You get everybody else's best shot. It's hard out here. This type of thing happens. Even the teams you don't expect to really meet your level, even those teams can upset you any given Sunday, or in the Chiefs' instance, Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, or Saturday. That is maybe I'm overreacting a little bit. It's one of the most interesting audio clips I've heard in 2 or 3 years around this Chiefs team. I don't think it's some like turning point. I'm not going to oversell this to you as either a great thing or a terrible thing, but man, is that not fascinating to you? Andy Reid went into that locker room of his players, and I don't think he liked what he saw. Not that he was like disappointed or let down, but I don't think he liked that a team of men that went out and won an NFL football game did not seem to have a collective smile on their faces because of the victory. I hear in that clip, I hear Andy Reid reaching for something. Being the guy that's trying to make sure that those players know that what they just did was still impressive. They won an NFL football game. That's a tremendously hard thing to do. And I'm glad Andy Reid is there to do that. I'm glad that he has the context of a football life. Glad that he has the context of what this team has been through in recent years. The context of losing to the Raiders on Christmas in a locker room even sadder than that one. And then that team doesn't lose another game until last week against the Bills. Of course, with the Super Bowl in between those 2 points. I also, not being Andy Reid, not speaking directly to any members of the Chiefs, not being paid to keep morale up, I don't have to be that way. You don't have to be that way. We can assess what happened there, but the most fascinating part is that by the mere reflection of what Andy Reid was showing there, you know what the rest of that locker room looked like and sounded like. I'm also going to read you a little bit. I'm gonna pull you behind a paywall of our shared dear friend Nate Taylor's work over in The Athletic. His post-game stories are always great reading. You can hear him across the station here, 96.5 The Fan. In fact, I'm going to be in one of these chairs with Cody Tapp from noon to 2 tomorrow, hanging out for a little bit, and we're going to have Nate on somewhere in that window, so I get to talk to Nate twice tomorrow. But I want to read you something Nate Taylor wrote, the lead of his post-game column from last night. Rookie receiver Xavier Worthy left the visitors' locker room at Bank of America Stadium stone-faced, even though his performance was full of quality moments. Joe Blamire, the Chiefs' pass game coordinator, shook his head in frustration when he made eye contact with reporters. Unlike most days after a game, quarterback Patrick Mahomes didn't chat with many teammates in the locker room. Right tackle Jawan Taylor sat in front of his locker longer than usual, his facial expression projecting his annoyance. Several Chiefs defenders left the locker room with their heads bowed. Much more from Nate. Go read it in The Athletic. But that is pretty powerful. We're going to spend the vast majority of our 2 hours here tonight talking about the specifics, as we usually do. I guess I've done this most weeks where we kind of start broad and big picture. I give you my thesis statement, the thing I think is most interesting, and we're going to kind of pull these feathers, pluck them out of this bird one by one. Happy Thanksgiving. But the overarching view and the lesson from this game and what the players themselves were taking from this game, I think it's fascinating, and I think it's good. Now, look, you don't want to be in a point, and this is where Andy Reid is out here in that audio we played. You don't want to be an NFL team that no longer takes joy in the victories. I've never coached or played in an NFL locker room, but I have to imagine that's a horrible way to go about your life, a miserable way to do things, and a pretty unwinnable circumstance to dig yourself back out of. If you aren't enjoying the wins, eventually you're not going to enjoy football anymore because you're sure as bleep not going to enjoy the losses, right? So the Chiefs should be appreciating their victories. The best comparison, though, is the last one, not the last game, the last victory. Look, man, the Chiefs were on the verge of a really sad, stinking locker room after that Broncos game. not only were they on the verge of losing that game, this wasn't a tie game you need to survive in advance. Maybe if you lose this rep, you go to overtime. If Spencer Schrader would have hooked it, the Chiefs have a little more runway to beat the Panthers in overtime, which still would have been its own level of defeating. But what actually happened against the Broncos with a two-point lead, waiting on a three-point kick to go up, is that Leo Chanel and several guys in that special teams unit made a play, and I don't know that I've seen the Chiefs celebrate like that. I certainly haven't seen the Chiefs celebrate like that since the Super Bowl. Now you got a walk-off toe tap just barely over the paint in the first week of the season. You've had several of these games come down to the wire or down to the literal final second, not knowing who was going to win the football game. Not a whole lot of kneel downs and ticking the clock away throughout this Chiefs season, as we've grown to expect. The Chiefs got plenty of joy out of narrowly avoiding the upset at the hands of the Broncos. This is not a team that has a bad attitude or anything along those lines. But what that team is yesterday is something that I know, that you know, that they know. The Chiefs won yesterday. They didn't play good football. The Chiefs' defense gave Bryce Young the canvas for almost certainly the best game of his NFL career. The Chiefs' offense, which did ultimately put up 30 points, had several chances to either put away or vastly extend the range of this game. And they couldn't do it until that last drive. Patrick Mahomes goes into superhero mode, puts on his cape, scrambles into field goal range. You're here with the undrafted rookie with the game on the line. Shout out again to Spencer Schrader. But I think the Chiefs know that was not up to their standard yesterday. They didn't intend on going to Carolina, taking it down to the final second of the game. And if one finger gets on that football, maybe we're talking about overtime. Maybe we're talking about an overtime loss. Who's to say? A coin flip happens. Are you super, completely, utterly confident Bryce Young doesn't lead a touchdown drive against that Chiefs defense? I was confident about that on Saturday. I was confident about that at 11:59 on Sunday. I wasn't confident about it for a whole lot longer. There are a lot of things that are going wrong, that are going fine, that are going suboptimally. And a lot of those things, I think, have a legitimate chance to improve. And the Chiefs have, I'll just tell you off the top here, the biggest silver lining for the Chiefs that was also on display in this sort of disappointing game yesterday. The big silver lining, spoiler alert, please stick around. This is not a very good radio tease of me. The big silver lining is that this team has Patrick Mahomes. He played really well yesterday before he ended up in scramble, do-it-myself mode. But ultimately, Patrick Mahomes knows, just about every player there, as far as I can tell, knows. And Andy Reid knows. You heard it in his reaction. They all know that was not championship football. That was squeak one out against the Panthers football. This team has played a lot of championship football. This would have been a lot less fun if they would have lost that game. There are real issues, but you have the best counterpoint possible, is that now you have this football team, back-to-back champions, with one goal in mind and a goal that cannot be accomplished until February. You know where this team stands. They know where they stand, and they know how much ground they have left to cover. I would not have been thrilled about a locker room that smells of champagne after a walk-off field goal to beat the Panthers. I think the Chiefs are probably in the right mental headspace at this point. I think they have some places they're going to get better, and they have some things that are legitimately concerning that might not get better. We'll get into more of those details when we come back next in the Josh Briscoe Show here on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to the Josh Briscoe Show, Monday nights starting at 7 on your new home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
specific now here on the Josh Briscoe Show, 96.5 The Fan. I am Josh Briscoe. The Chiefs won. It didn't feel like a win. Even in the Chiefs locker room, it doesn't seem like it felt like a win. What did we learn? Anything new in the mix here for this version of the Chiefs, or is this just more of the 2024 Chiefs? I would argue that we did learn something, although I'm not sure it's a lesson that you're going to love. As always, by the way, I never mention this anymore. I used to do this all the time, and I forget now. If you want to get in touch with me and reach out to the show, as several texters have, including Dan and KCK, good to hear from you as always. Dan, you can text the show, 913-586-7965 is the text line, or you can tweet me at JB Briscoe. You can at me at jbbriscoe.com on Blue Sky. You can send me a message on Threads. I've signed up for all these different socials just to try to figure out like which one of them is going to be the least miserable to use and, you know, the best use of our time and all of that kind of thing, right? So yesterday I was going back through after the game and kind of seeing I've got ways that I can push my social posts out to all the different branches of social media. So there's this one site, and it'll post it on Twitter, Blue Sky, and Threads. This is an aside, but I promise there's a payoff. And so through the game, I was, you know, using that and pushing to all three of the different branches. And, you know, my Twitter numbers are what they usually are, and the Blue Sky numbers have been pretty good. It's gotten a pretty good start. And Threads just isn't really set up for, like, sports live tweeting, for lack of a better term, since we can't say tweeting anymore. We can say it. It's just not as accurate. Whatever. They're all tweets to me. But on Threads, it's not as chronological, so it's much harder to have, like, a timeline that just follows the news as things go, which is the best part of Twitter, which is something that Blue Sky is doing pretty well with right now. I was over on Threads and seeing that my posts were, like, not really working the way I wanted it to, not doing any crazy numbers, and I saw, like three or four posts in a row that all said, liked by the some account and, like, four others. I'm like, okay, not great numbers. And then I looked closer, and I went, wait a second. All of these Threads posts say, liked by David Koechner and five others. David Koechner and four others. Oh, all right, cool. I guess I'll keep posting on Threads, maybe just for David Koechner. If he's listening right now, David, I can text you my takes if you want, I guess. I don't know why he's on Threads, but it was actually his account. I promise I'm not getting got by, like, fake verifications connected to his Instagram and everything. It's the guy. So you can tweet me on Twitter or you can blue me on Blue Sky. Let's not call it that. Or David Koechner exclusively can message me on Threads, but no one else can. It's basically where I've settled in here now. So if you want to reach out, text line, socials, et cetera, you can do that. Here's the one thing. Yeah, it's really one thing. Here's the one thing I think we learned that I wasn't already pretty confident in. I had a hunch, but it did go a little bit worse than I expected it to. The thing I think I learned against the Panthers is that the issues we talked so much about last week against the Bills aren't opponent-based issues. The stuff that Josh Allen could exploit, the question was, can Josh Allen and Bryce Young both exploit the lack of four-man pass rush, the blitzes becoming predictable, or forced for that matter, the cornerback issues, both with Nazee Johnson on the outside and with Shamari Connor in the slot. You know, it's not a good thing for Josh Allen or, you know, Justin Herbert, higher level quarterbacks, to be able to pick on these issues, because you're going to run into them in the playoffs, right? But Josh Allen picking on Nazee Johnson with Amari Cooper running the routes is a little bit of a different thing than Bryce Young and Adam Thielen, right? Well, it wasn't really yesterday. That four-man pass rush looked very, very similar, both in usage and in results. The secondary was very, very similar. Nazee Johnson had a slightly better day, but there was a bomb that would have been a huge gain for Carolina that was, I think it was Leggett that just dropped it. I'm not feeling any better about the biggest current issues that were made so blindingly evident against Buffalo, and that to me is a little bit concerning. The other part of it, and we'll talk, I keep forgetting also to let you know who our guest is going to be throughout these shows. Zach Eisen of ChiefsOnSI.com will make his Josh Briscoe Show debut. I believe his 96.5 The Fan debut, I'm pretty certain. He does great work over there, along with myself and Jordan Foote and a couple others over at ChiefsOnSI.com. But he always has interesting angles on things and is a certified ball knower. So hopefully he'll be able to bring us a little bit of wisdom here tonight. We'll talk to him about all this later on. But it was an unsurprisingly uninspiring performance from the Chiefs, especially defensively yesterday. So I wasn't caught off guard by the issues. I was just disappointed by the fact that the issues that Josh Allen was taking advantage of, Bryce Young was also taking advantage on. They're interconnected in a way that also concerns me. I'll explain why when we come back on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to The Josh Briscoe Show, Monday nights starting at 7 on your new home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
Let's get into the issues on defense here. You know the position groups. We've been talking about corner and defensive end for a little while now. But as we've been talking about, the problem here, this is the concerning part. The problem here is that instead of these issues helping solve each other, I think these issues are playing into the Chiefs' own worst weaknesses at this point. It's the interconnected nature of the pass rush and the secondary. We talked about this a little bit. We've talked about this the last couple of weeks. I talked about this with Fesco and Dusty this morning. We'll talk about it at every turn across the station, across the week, because this, to me, is the thing that I'm worried about in the Super Bowl sense. A lot of this stuff, even like left tackle, we'll talk about DJ Humphreys at some point tonight as well. The Chiefs have officially signed him. He showed up on the NFL's transaction list, the former Arizona Cardinals left tackle, made one Pro Bowl a couple of years ago. Chiefs brought him in. I think we may have a new left tackle for the Chiefs in the next couple of weeks. We'll discuss him more as we go. But I never thought, and still right now don't think, that Wanye Morris would be the reason the Chiefs don't win a Super Bowl this season. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think that would happen. I think at this point, Kingsley Suamataia could have been. You say you get to a point in an AFC championship game where Wanye goes down in the first quarter, Kingsley's got to play the rest of the game, and the Chiefs lose that game because they cannot protect Patrick Mahomes' blind side? Plausible. Plausible. I think that could be the straw that breaks the camel's back, or the one stone that brings on the flood, whatever. But I don't really think Wanye Morris is that. I don't even really think the wide receiver issues, although there's some of those, and we'll talk about DeAndre Hopkins tonight as well. There are plenty of issues that can make life harder. But I don't think the vast majority of those are actively threatening the three-peat in quite the same way. The fact that the Chiefs' four-man pass rush is underperforming while the Chiefs are playing a cornerback two who's not a cornerback two and a slot corner who's not a slot corner, that to me brings me the most concern. The offense has a similar issue in terms of the interconnected flaws where the O-line is up and down while the wide receivers are separating really inconsistently. That's a problem that is harder to solve than having just one of those problems. But it's also a problem that Patrick Mahomes can solve, or at least help solve, so it stresses me out less. There's no singular villain throughout any of the Chiefs' issues right now. It's a lot of stuff going subparly simultaneously, and that's not great. Text came in and said, the Panthers ranked 31st in pass rush. It sacked Mahomes five times. My worry is him getting hurt by a TJ Watt. Totally fair. Totally fair. I think we've seen Wanye Morris, although you like Max Crosby really baptized him. I think we've seen Wanye hold up well enough in those circumstances that he will lose some of those reps. Do not get me wrong. He will lose some of those reps, but not in a way that completely tanks the offense. But also, to your point, Texter, TJ Watt and the big play nature of the Steelers offense and the entire character of their defense is the reason that I am genuinely worried that we're going to, in Kansas City, have a couple of humbuggy Christmases in a row. I think that's very much on the table. Steelers are kind of a rough matchup for this Chiefs team. Maybe, and I would say from what I know about DJ Humphreys, based off film from before he tore his ACL, which you got to remember he's recovering from right now, medically cleared to play is different than looking like his old self. Best case scenario, Humphreys absolutely helps alleviate that and would be a better pass protector than Wanye Morris. I don't know when we're going to get there, but the fear of a TJ Watt type is well-earned. I fear a TJ Watt type when I walk to my car after the show. There's always a chance. The thing at corner right now and at defensive end in terms of the pass rush rotation that's really frustrating is how similar it's been over these last couple of weeks and the fact that it seems like the Chiefs have a couple of pretty different mentalities about how to solve these issues. I'm going to throw some snap count numbers at you from the defensive line these last 2 weeks. Chris Jones and Tershawn Wharton led defensive tackles with 85% and 67% of the snaps against Buffalo. Against Carolina, 85% and 63% respectively. The same percentage number for Jones, basically the same number for Wharton. More importantly, the edge group. There's not a lot of juice to be found at defensive tackle. Your best defensive lineman by a country mile is Chris Jones, and your second best defensive tackle by a pretty wide margin, at least as a pass rusher, is certainly Tershawn Wharton. What about the edge, though? George Karloftis and Mike Dana got 85% and 62% of the work against the Bills before getting 84% and 68% against the Panthers. Pretty much the same ratio. Felix Anudike Uzama got 12 snaps in both games. Joshua Uche, who we talked about quite a bit here last week after getting 5 snaps in Buffalo, he got 11 snaps in Carolina, while Malik Herring dropped from 11 to 6 in those two games. So it seems like Uche just kind of got some Malik Herring reps, not necessarily even in usage, just by the numbers. That's not exactly tinkering with the math, changing the rotations. There's not a lot of creative lever pulling going on there. In that, I understand that Steve Spagnuolo clearly trusts George Karloftis and Mike Dana the most, and George Karloftis is probably this team's best healthy defensive end right now. As an overall player, I think he almost certainly is. But it's okay if George Karloftis only wants to play 75% of the snaps next week. Not wants to play, but does, right? Like, I think you could take 10 or 12 snaps away from the Karloftis-Dana pairing, and maybe it's giving Felix a few more reps in earlier downs. Maybe it's letting Uche, who I know is a totally different type of pass rusher, maybe it's letting him be out there in some maybe passing situations. Not holding him for 3rd and 8, but letting him be out there for 3rd and 4. Who knows what they're going to do? Or 2nd and 10. Maybe they're going to throw the ball. Maybe we want a speed rusher on the field who we just traded for. Like that to me is a little bit of the frustration in terms of what the Chiefs haven't done here. You acquired this guy. Cam Thomas keeps being inactive. You acquired him before the season. Do you have a plan? Do you have a plan in place for how you'd like to use him? The 4-man pass rush has no juice right now. You want to try something else? Tweak it a little bit? Get a little creative? No, they're just kind of sticking with the familiar options there, as opposed to maybe trying to get a few more reps under Uche's belt as he's in the, like, 30s now over his time in Kansas City. 36 snaps in 4 games. So getting close to that 10 snaps per game average. I'd like to see a little more from him. He has speed. Nobody else on that defensive line has speed right now. But you could say, hey, you know, want to just keep the floor where it's at with Dana and Karlaftis, and those are your guys you trust. Okay. It's not what they're doing at corner, though. At corner, the Chiefs clearly want Nazi Johnson to be the new number two corner, still desperately, desperately impoverished by the loss of Jalen Watson. They want Nazi Johnson to be CB2. Okay, fine. I am okay with the Chiefs just force-feeding reps to Nazi Johnson while they figure out if he can do that job. Because presumably, the Chiefs think they know who Joshua Williams is. Good man corner, physical, can do a little bit of beating you up at the line of scrimmage in a way that I think is worth having on the field at times. Pretty good in man, gets lost in zone all the time. But the Chiefs have a scouting report on Joshua Williams. I have a scouting report on Joshua Williams. So they want to see if Nazi Johnson can do the job. So we're going to absolutely feed you trial by fire against Buffalo, trial by Panther against Carolina. Not great results. It's not a lot of fun, but I understand. But at defensive end, it's these two guys. With a sprinkling of the rest here and there. With Charles Aminihu coming back, by the way. At slot corner, it's just, hey, this is Shamari Connor's thing. He's one of their five best defensive backs. I think I believe that. But I don't feel good about him being your best slot cover guy. Because he's just out of position there. Uche and FAU aren't getting the go-get-your-feet-wet reps that Nazi Johnson's being force-fed right now. And when Aminihu comes back, he's going to have to get some work. Is he just taking those reps from Malik Herring? Or is he going to take reps from Herring and Felix? That's okay. A healthy Aminihu is the best defensive end, or at least the best edge pass rusher on this team. Second best pass rusher behind Chris Jones. Aminihu tore his ACL in January. I don't know how close to a healthy Aminihu we're going to get. I'm hopeful because I think it's a huge deal for the offense or for the defense if he does come back and make an impact, but it's a lot to ask. I'm not even really frustrated. I'm a little bit discouraged because throughout this navigation of these two position groups, I think the Chiefs have a few things they could do or could have done. They don't really seem to be doing just yet, and so the results haven't changed. Again, survive in advance, keep your head above water, let Nazi Johnson get as many live reps as you can. Okay. It's not going to be fun. The growing pains aren't enjoyable, but if he can be that guy in the playoffs, then give him the reps and figure it out for sure. I wonder when they'll pull the plug on that experiment if it doesn't improve. It was a little better yesterday than it was last week, but where is the Joshua Williams line for you? With that in mind, by the way, I don't know if everybody caught this or not. So if you did, you might be smelling what I'm putting down. If you didn't, something to think about. In two consecutive weeks, Joshua Williams has been flagged twice for running out of bounds on punt coverage and not establishing himself back in bounds as quickly as possible. It is essentially, on some level, a mental and effort penalty. I don't think Josh Williams has like an effort problem. I don't want to put that out there and make it sound like I, you know, have some dirty secret. I don't. But those penalties are so frustrating. Because again, it's like unforced out of bounds, right? You're going down in coverage, or you can't run out of bounds and then run down the sideline and then burst back out of the into the field of play 40 yards later and tackle the guy, right? Obviously. But blockers are going to try to run you out of bounds and make your path to the returner as difficult as possible. Tough spot. Being a gunner on punt coverage, hard job. But Joshua Williams made the same mistake twice in 2 weeks. It's hard to trust a guy that does that on a repeated basis. With his main defensive issue being kind of losing his zone discipline, floating to where he doesn't necessarily need to be, I think that's the main reason that Williams is behind Johnson still, trying to let Nazi get the first crack at that job? But it's an ugly spot to be in right now. The good news, I think, is if they get better at pass rush or at corner, that growth can benefit the other unit because they are so deeply intertwined. But right now, I don't know how those groups are going to get a whole lot better. And they bit you against Josh Allen and the Bills, understandable. And they bit you against Bryce Young and the Panthers. A lot more concerning. We'll take a timeout. I'll talk about two moves the Chiefs didn't make at corner that also wouldn't be helping things. I'll explain next.
You're listening to The Josh Briscoe Show, Monday nights starting at 7 on your new home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
The Josh Briscoe Show here, 96.5 The Fan. I'm Josh Briscoe, James Howe on the other side of the glass. We'll talk to Zach Eisen of ChiefsOnSI.com coming up here in about 10 minutes. But I got to make good on the tease from last segment. What else is happening at corner? There were really two branches here that I wanted to continue down the hypothetical of. But as always, you can text in at the text line 913-586-7965. And I encourage you to text in if your texts are as good as this one from a 785 number. Jay Briscoe and After Dark Sports Talk go together like peanut butter jelly with a baseball bat. I don't know what that means, but I agree and I love it. Thank you, Texter. This is really just kind of note-keeping. One of these is just honestly like a pretty big bummer, and then one of them I think is a little bit of a dodged bullet. Marshawn Lattimore, who was the corner that got traded right down near the wire of the trade deadline, ended up going for a pretty hefty package of picks, going from the Saints to the Commanders. And the Chiefs were reportedly interested in Lattimore, and they would have been interested, to, in my understanding and my best estimation on things like contracts and whatnot, is that the Chiefs would have been interested in Lattimore for this season, and then after that, his cap number would have been untenable. For Washington, they could talk themselves into him being there over the next couple of years and being maybe even restructuring that deal, playing out some of that deal, but it was a longer-term investment, and they felt like that, you know, increased the value they'd be willing to give up for Lattimore. Okay. So Washington plays trades for Marshawn Lattimore. Do you know what Marshawn Lattimore has done for Washington since arriving? He has not played. He has not practiced. I mean, I don't know if he's put on a helmet. It's not like a value judgment. I'm just saying I don't know that he's gotten burgundy and gold lined shoulder pads yet. He hasn't played yet. He hasn't practiced. And Washington now looks like a much more flawed team than the version of the team that traded for Marshawn Lattimore. So I don't know if Washington regrets that trade, but I know the Chiefs don't regret not making it. What's the other move they had on the table? It's a move they made during the offseason. I was bummed when they traded L'Jarius Sneed for a third-round pick. Not confused, not really upset, but it was an unsatisfying ending. Chiefs draft L'Jarius Sneed in the fourth round out of Louisiana Tech. They develop him into one of the best corners in football, and their reward for being able to split with him because they didn't say they could give him that contract. Their reward's a third-round pick. Remember how long that trade took to come together, too? And we were covering it for Chiefs on SI, so it felt like every couple of days for like a month, it was, this reporter says this is going to be the asking price for L'Jarius Sneed. Well, this anonymous Twitter account says these are the three teams that are interested. Well, this reporter says this is the expectation. Ultimately, the Chiefs settled for a third-round pick for Sneed. Again, I didn't think it was a bad move. It was just a bummer. Well, and another bummer, L'Jarius Sneed is now on injured reserve, and he's been out since October 13th. That's for a Titans team that's mid-rebuild. Again, Washington sold out a little bit to try to make a run this year. Now they're wobbling, and Lattimore hasn't played. There were other things I suppose the Chiefs could have done, but that's unfortunate. And this might be part of the story if they don't three-peat. When we look back and say, hey, what? You know, they were in line to make history. No one's ever done this before. Here's why these other teams didn't pull off the three-peat. What was the Chiefs' problem? Why couldn't the Chiefs do it? I never make excuses like this for football teams, but the Chiefs have been really, really, really unlucky. Now, maybe it was bad evaluation for Kingsley Suamataia, but it wasn't bad evaluation for running the offense through Rashee Rice. That was going great until Patrick Mahomes put his shoulder through his knee. I think Hollywood Brown, maybe we'll still get to see him a little bit, and hopefully some of these conversations will just be figments of our past eventually, but Hollywood Brown, I think, was in line for a huge year here. Freak injury, falling to the turf on the first offensive snap of the preseason. They really needed another corner to step up opposite Trent McDuffie. Who's going to step up in the absence of L'Jarius Sneed? Jalen Watson's playing like a top 30 corner in the league, and he breaks his ankle, done for the year. The Chiefs' crime in those instances is not having three number one receivers or two number two corners. They've had horrible injury luck, and they've largely had pretty good injury luck throughout the majority of this dynasty. You have Travis Kelce, right before on the eve of the season, hyperextending his knee. Mahomes has had plenty of injuries that have banged him up. They've lost players for periods of time, but largely the Chiefs have had pretty good injury luck, especially over these last couple of years, and then they've had horrible injury luck this season. Now, that's no excuse to just lay down and let the season fall away, the three-peat go by the wayside. It's why you've seen the Chiefs be aggressive about DeAndre Hopkins. Even now, see them be aggressive about DJ Humphries. But ultimately, keeping Sneed doesn't fix this. Trading for Lattimore doesn't fix this. Jalen Watson was the answer to their problem, and he broke his ankle. Got a text that says Watson isn't done for the year. I'm gonna tell you, real thin shot. You will not see him in the regular season. You can hold out some hope for the playoffs, but it would be something short of a medical miracle, but beyond expectations for Jalen Watson to be back this year. That's my understanding. I think a few others have put that out there with better sources and better reporting than me. That to me is a collection of educated guesses getting you to the end result there. But unfortunately, the end result is that I don't know that this defense is getting reinforcements beyond Charles Omenihu at this point. And we don't even know what he's going to look like. It's a tough spot to be in for a defense that I think was legitimately, clearly one of the best in football for the first few weeks of the season. Now, significantly lessened, significantly hampered. The good news is I do actually think the offense is heading in a nice direction on a couple of things. The DeAndre Hopkins usage, a lot of people have been confused by. The DJ Humphries signing, I think, is going to be exciting. Gives us something else to talk about to protect Patrick Mahomes' blind side. We'll work our way through some of the offensive things a little bit down the road in the next hour, but we'll lead it off with Zach Eisen of ChiefsOnSI.com. What's his fix for the Chiefs' defensive issues? We'll talk about that next on the Josh Briscoe Show here on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to the Josh Briscoe Show, Monday nights starting at 7 on your new home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
The Josh Briscoe Show here on 96.5 The Fan. I am Josh Briscoe. It would be weird if I wasn't. James Howell on the other side of the glass, but it's not just the two of us anymore. Ooh, we have a little geotag on the phones here now. This makes you seem even more worldly, Zach Eisen. It says West Los Angeles, California, as we go to the West Coast to talk to our guy, Zach Eisen of ChiefsOnSI.com. You can follow him on Twitter at ZachEisen21. Zach, how you doing over there?
I'm doing well. How are you, Josh?
I'd say I can't complain, but I can. I complain for like an hour straight about what we saw on Sunday and everything else. But, you know, it is a very different scale that we judge this Chiefs team on. There are a lot of serious issues, but I don't know. Actually, have you heard or did you see the clip of Andy Reid right after the game in the locker room? Have you heard that yet?
Yeah, I did. I watched it last night. And,
okay.
You know, I usually think he's more jovial in the locker room, and that one kind of seemed like he took the tenor of the locker room pretty serious, and he was upset that the guys were just hanging their head.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me, and if we can play it again, James, if you end up having it up, just flag me down, because I'm guessing, you know, it's a new hour. I've done this radio thing before. I probably ought to just replay the audio for people. Let's play it again here real quick. This was Andy Reid in the locker room after the game last night.
All right, so look, I don't want to see anybody hanging their head, man. This league is crazy. That's the way this thing goes. You saw it yesterday with college football. Nothing's given to you. And you're getting their best shot. So you keep your heads up, man. And we get this thing rolling. Right? We got some things we got to clean up. But we keep it rolling here. That's the important part. Winning is the important part right here. And you guys bear down and got it done. All right, let's give it one Chiefs here. How about those Chiefs?
Even that was a little bit sad. Like, until the last 10 seconds, I would have believed that was a post-loss locker room. What do you like or not like from that, Zach? Because I'm a little bit heartened that the Chiefs seem to have taken that game in a very similar way that most of us did, which is that it was a win, but it wasn't very good football.
Yeah, I think that human nature creeps in, and when you are, you know, back-to-back Super Bowl champs, you feel that you're much better than everyone else in the league. And when you're squeaking by, and I think it's like 8 out of 10 have been one score wins, I think there's a little bit of like, hey, like we should be better and we should be able to put it together, because early in the season, the defense was playing well and the offense couldn't get it together. And now the offense seems to be playing better and the defense seems to be struggling. So there isn't this, you know, collective dominant game that we've seen this year. And I think it's starting to creep into the player's mindset.
Yeah. And I'm not bothered by that, I think, because it is a way to keep, you know, setting a higher standard for a team that is 10-1, that is alone at the top of the AFC. But as you mentioned, the defense is the thing that's cause for concern right now. You posted on Twitter last night, I think, or early this morning, that since week 8, the Chiefs' defense ranks 28th by EPA per play allowed. I think you can point your finger in a couple of directions here. What's the biggest issue with the Chiefs' defense in your mind right now?
I think the biggest issue is that the pass rush cannot cover up the now injured secondary.
Yeah.
Where when Jalen Watson was out there with Trent McDuffie, you had two above average corners that Spags could have trusted playing man, and you could have blitzed and still done everything that Spags wants to do. And now that you have Nazi Johnson out there, it becomes harder to hide deficiencies in the defense when you already don't have great coverage players at the linebackers or safety position. So now you're more reliant on the four-man pass rush, and frankly, they haven't been good in the past month.
I'm glad you didn't take my bait there, but I did put it on the hook of to pick a thing. Those things are also intertwined, and it's just snowballing now, where if you can't get pressure, like you said, those weaknesses everywhere else begin to be easier and easier to exploit if you're Josh Allen or Bryce Young. One thing you mentioned, though, that I have not yet said tonight that I think you're absolutely right about is the fact that that pass rush and that great cover corner play was also covering up for some deficiencies at safety and linebacker. What's the problem there in terms of how those two position groups have been performing in coverage? Because it wasn't all Nazi Johnson yesterday. Several of those outbreakers that the Panthers were picking apart were against safeties.
Yeah, well, I think that not having the flexibility to put Trent McDuffie in the slot really hurts this team's ability to cover slot players. I think Chamari Connor is a really good player in the sense of coming downhill, making tackles, and being physical at the line of scrimmage. But coverage, it's kind of hit or miss, and you really have seen that over the last few weeks where there's these outbreaking routes that he's playing too far inside, and it's just free yardage for the offense. And I don't think it's necessarily his fault because they don't have anybody else, you know, to play outside corner, kick McDuffie inside, or to play slot instead of him. But it's a bad matchup for him to constantly have that pressure on him.
It's his worst spot to be in on the field, and they keep putting him there because, to your point, I don't know what else you do. If you do let McDuffie go back into the slot a little bit more, now you're playing Nazi Johnson and Joshua Williams on the outside. If you take Shamari Connor off the field, Chris Rowland-Rawless is on the field, and he is not as good of a downhill player as Connor is, which you just mentioned. Is there a change you would make in the secondary, or is this a matter of growing pains and letting it play out? Do you favor Williams over Nazi Johnson? Do you favor Rowland-Rawless over Connor when it's in a slot coverage situation? Any levers you'd pull there in the secondary?
I mean, I think it would be interesting to just see what it would look like with Williams and Nazi on the outside. I don't think it would be necessarily pretty, but like, who are the Raiders rolling out at quarterback that scares you? So maybe just give them the reps, and, you know, McDuffie plays inside, and hopefully they learn towards the playoff time. But I mean, I've seen Josh Williams play at least good football for this team, so I don't understand the, you know, coaching staff trying to, you know, roll out Nazi Johnson and not giving Josh Williams any shot. I don't know if something happened internally or whatnot, but that's just kind of the most confusing part to me.
We're talking to Zach Eisen. You can read his work at ChiefsOnSI.com. Follow him on Twitter at ZachEisen21. On the offensive side, a guy we're going to talk more about here in a little bit, DeAndre Hopkins has been really good when he's gotten the football, and you've noticed has been on the field, but he hasn't gotten a tremendously large workload, less than half the snaps yesterday. What's your level of concern there? Is this a ease him in and be there by the playoffs thing for you, or is there something that you're alarmed by in terms of the wide receiver rotation right now?
I think that's probably the right way to think about it. That's they're just still trying to figure out what's the best way to use him, and they may know already, and they kind of don't want to use all their concepts in the regular season against the Panthers. But at the same time, I think, I mean, he's also 32, so you know, preserving his body for the long run would also be smart. But I think that it would be nice to see him play closer to that 60 to 70% snap count mark compared to, what was it, 40% yesterday?
Yeah, 45, I think. But it has been below that threshold. I also wonder, when Juju Smith-Schuster came back, that's when Hopkins dropped back down a little bit as Juju took a few more snaps. I know there's so much about the comfort in the offense and knowing where to be, and it's why Justin Watson's on the field a ton. I see that. I'm certainly not panicking about Hopkins. Another guy who has inspired some moments of panic here and there, but I think has been playing some pretty good football and had a pretty good game yesterday under the radar, is Xavier Worthy. Have you seen growth from him the way that I think we have, where he is being trusted with a little bit more as this season goes on?
Yeah, I definitely have. And I think Mahomes was throwing with his chest to Worthy yesterday and some of these comebacking routes and different stuff. And that outbreaker on the sideline, that was just a speed out. That first down was really impressive from Worthy. And I think, you know, we understand that he's fast and all that, and I just would like to see him get some more opportunities on these deep balls. And I thought yesterday was going to be an opportunity where they were going to be up big in the game or at least have a comfortable lead, and they could have taken some shots and practiced some of that stuff with game speed. And obviously that didn't come for them. So I just hope that they're able to, you know, get that down, because I think it's going to be something that, you know, unless defenses see it for a little bit, I'm not sure how much they're going to respect it.
Where are you on Patrick Mahomes' deep ball right now? I saw you tweet something about that yesterday, too. And obviously, he and Worthy have had some misconnections that you can kind of split the blame on. But he is not going downfield very often this season. And when he is, it's not going great. Where do you put the blame on that? How worried does that make you?
Yeah, I think that the one thing that's really odd to me is, like, the one chance he took downfield yesterday was on that final drive right before the scramble. Is he underthrew it? And I don't know who said it, but somebody said it in the past where it's like he was affected because MVS couldn't catch the ball out in front of him. So he kept underthrowing the deep ball to MVS so he could catch it. And now it's like he underthrows it to everybody. So I don't know if that's totally the case, but it's an interesting theory that I'm now like thinking about when I see all these balls being underthrown.
I think there's something to it, man. I mean, listen, most of us on some level had like a bad relationship that you're still sort of dealing with the trauma of years later. MVS may have done some irreparable damage to Mahomes' confidence in the deep ball, and frankly, I wouldn't blame him. That was a disaster. I have trust issues from how that relationship went last year. What about the O-line? We have seen the addition now. DJ Humphries is signed to the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll hear from Andy Reid tomorrow about it, presumably. But Actually, I don't know if it will be, Andy. Their schedule's all switched up this week, but we should hear a little bit more from the coaching staff about Humphreys and the plan there. He's coming off an ACL tear from late in last season. He had a Pro Bowl year a couple years ago in Arizona. Good years around that. Where are you at on him? What does it mean for Wanya Morris? I think we know what it means for Kingsley. The redshirt year is back for him. Obviously not the way that they planned on that going. What's your view of the situation at left tackle now that Humphreys is in the picture? Kingsley seems like he's out of it, and Wanya Morris is the incumbent right now.
Yeah, I mean, just starting this off, I think they signed Humphreys to be the starter eventually, and they believe that he will be the starter at some point. So whenever he's ready, passes the physical, and looks good enough on the practice field, he will probably be the starting left tackle. I think the biggest concern for me is, you know, there's all these charting sites that say, oh, the Chiefs don't give up much pressure and yada, 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 and whatever they, you know, however they chart it for themselves. But I look at it and I, you know, every time Mahomes is in the pocket, it looks very muddy and there's not much room for him to move around. If you looked at like Bryce Young's pockets yesterday or Josh Allen's pockets the week before, there's this big space where the quarterback is able to just operate and, you know, slide either direction where if he feels pressure from one side. And I just don't think Mahomes has been afforded that opportunity a lot of these games. And even though they might not be charted as losses for the offensive linemen, they're still getting pushed and just the pocket's collapsing on Mahomes a lot.
Along those lines, I think you mentioned a little bit on this. If you don't have anything on it, let me know. We could go to something else. But I think you and me and Jordan had discussed this briefly. And then Trey Smith mentioned the end tackle games today. Mitchell Schwartz was tweeting about this yesterday. Do you see the stylistic sort of misfit between Trey Smith and Juwan Taylor and the fact that they seem to almost always just have such difficulty in passing off those defensive line games? And if so, What is going on there that makes two pretty good players kind of a weird pairing?
Yeah, well, Trey Smith prefers to play in a phone booth, so he doesn't want to be, you know, moving around. He wants to wrestle you in a one-by-one box, and that's where he's going to be at his best. As for Juwan Taylor, he wants to be in the most space possible and be able to show off his athleticism. So when he takes that massive pass set, it opens up this massive gap between him and Trey Smith, and when they run these stunts, there's either a gap or, you know, free run right at Mahomes.
It's so interesting, and I was going to ask if there's a solution to that, but I don't know that there is, because you're asking one of these two, again, very good in one currently highly paid and one's about to be highly paid players to change the way that they play. I think that there's a future where Wanya Morris and Kingsley Suamataia get discussed as guard prospects. I think there's a future in which there's some shuffling in a perhaps post-Trey Smith, maybe even a post-Joe Tooney era over the next year or two, but I don't know what to do about that in the meantime, because it does create those massive gaps between those two players on the right side. And it feels like, typically speaking, they've been all right about winning their one-on-one matchup so far this season. But those moments of them converging stylistically creates easy pressures for defenses.
Yep, I 100% agree. And there was a play yesterday where I think it's maybe Juju or...
Juju was lined up as a tight end, almost. Yes, very, very tight there, yeah.
And he chips the D end inside, and Juwan takes such a massive set that it just goes straight through the A gap, or B gap, and it's a free runner at Mahomes, and he has to rush the ball out. And it's just this weird thing where the O-line, and I don't know, I don't want to, you know, blame the coaching or right. the players, because we don't know what's happening inside the building, but there's just this something that's not clicking where the, you know, those two, Trey and Juwan, or even the chippers with the tackles, just can't get these funky, you know, pickups together.
And at an NFL level, it's not these like never seen before defensive line games. It's, hey, can you just pick up this action? And they haven't been able to.
Well, the Chargers run the same stunt for years against the Chiefs, and the Broncos run that same pressure where they have the guy, the looper, drop out and play the spy. And it just seems like they keep struggling every year. So I'm just not entirely sure what's going on, if they're not picking up on the coaching points and they just keep going back to what feels natural to them. And it's just an odd thing that they keep having these problems when they're actually such good players individually.
I think it was the Chargers game earlier this year where they were doing so much of that that it seemed like it was, this is a little bit of an overstatement, but it seemed like it was almost short-circuiting Mahomes, where because he went to try to scramble and try to escape to the outside, and then one of those kind of dropped looping spires, for lack of three better terms, would end up kind of closing in there. Now Mahomes is running into pressure that wasn't actually going to be there. It's really interesting to see that kind of thing get the Chiefs every once in a while, because we do believe that by and large they are a well-coached football team. If I do give you the entire scope of the schematics, we will never be able to do a good job of assessing how offensive line technique is being taught behind closed doors. But when you do look at how the offense is operating with the lesser number of deep shots, and with the way that Mahomes is moving, and with, I think his pocket presence has improved over these last couple of weeks a little bit, but how do you feel about where the offense is at philosophically at this point?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because the way I see offense, I mean, just on the simplistic terms, is that to be in a great offense, you either have to out-talent the other team or out-scheme them. Mm-hmm. So, like, out-talent is like the Eagles or the Bengals, where they have these dominant outside weapons and they can just win against anybody. And you're talking about out-scheme, like, think about the Shanahan guys. Mm-hmm. The Chiefs right now really don't have an advantage in either. And that's not to say Andy Reid has lost his fastball, because I think when it comes to the playoff time, like, there is, you know, there's an advantage where you're more focused on a game plan, the game plan basis, versus just rolling out every week. But, you know, now that Rashee Rice is down and Hollywood Brown is down, you don't really have the talent to just get away with your basic mesh, stick, flood concepts that they want to just run out every, you know, as their staple concepts.
We made incredible time covering an incredible amount of ground. I think you have served your time, Zach. I appreciate you making some time with us tonight. I imagine that you're just doing this on the beach, because to me, I imagine all of California and the entire greater LA area as just beachfront, which I know is factually untrue, but it feels good for the vibes here in an increasingly freezing Kansas City. So thanks for chiming in with us tonight, and I look forward to whatever you want to write this week. Good call on any of the stuff we just talked about. Any of that, green light from me.
All right. Well, I appreciate you having me on, Josh. Hopefully our Lakers-Suns game tomorrow goes well. And, you know, the Lee Cup is taken home by the Lakers again.
I forgot about that. We've got a cup match coming tomorrow. Never mind. You can tell Jordan what you want to rant about. We're enemies until I get to see my Suns hoisting the hardware I've always dreamed of them having. Fantastic. The trophy case will no longer be empty. Thanks, Zach.
This is why Matt Ishbia bought the team.
James, hang up on him. I don't want to talk to him anymore. It's Zach Eisen of ChiefsOnSI.com. He does really great work. I'm biased because I get to edit it sometimes. Mostly Jordan Foote edits it. And then I just get to read it after that. So I'm super biased there. But he does great work breaking down the team for ChiefsOnSI.com, and a real good Twitter follow at Zach Eisen 21 over there. We'll take a timeout. It's the Josh Briscoe Show here at 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to The Josh Briscoe Show, Monday nights starting at 7 on your new home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
Thanks again to Zach Eisen for making some time for us tonight on The Josh Briscoe Show here on 96.5 The Fan. Thought about this for a couple of weeks, James Howell, producing the show from the other side of the glass. Thought for a while, it's a good, easy setup in here to do some standing radio. You stand and produce all the time over there. I feel like my energy level, especially for kind of this fourth quarter of the show here, I feel like it can only be improved by being on my feet. I feel a little bouncier. I feel like I've got takes to throw, maybe punches to throw, just, I guess, at the mic stand. Just let me know if at any point, you know, it feels like I've lost my train of thought, or I've gotten too far away from the microphone. But I think we got a little standing energy for the last little bit of this show. I'm feeling dangerous.
Yeah, why not? I mean, it's kind of been a little gloomy, you know.
It is.
A little bit of the negative side of things.
That's right.
Yeah, let's pick up the energy a little bit. I like that.
It's been a little gloomy outside. It's been a little gloomy in here. Chiefs-Panthers was a little gloomy. So I want to make an analogy for you. James, are you a big either Drake or Kendrick Lamar fan? You a big hip-hop guy in general?
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm a fan of either one of those guys in particular, but I do like hip hop.
It's acceptable.
For sure.
So I don't know if you saw what happened earlier today. But so Kendrick drops sort of a, I mean, not even sort of, drops a surprise album on Friday. Friday? Was that right? Yeah, I was on with Cody and Gold right as it happened. It was like Friday at 11. Kendrick drops a new album. Everyone's familiar with the summer of Drake and Kendrick and all of the things that happened there. The beef throughout, exchanging songs between these two titans of the industry, one of them who has much more to stand on in terms of cultural impact and authenticity, one of whom has a lot more to stand on in terms of streams and, you know, party songs or whatever. I've had my time with both. I certainly align myself as much more of a Kendrick guy over these last, I would say, several years. This predates the beef. Drake has done some things. Musically, Drake has done some things I'm not a huge fan of. Outside of the music, we... Also true. Also, some questionable activities. But I was a big Views guy when that came out. I listened to Views in college often enough for me to feel like I was a Drake guy. I don't know, that hasn't really held. But something happened today that has spun out of that beef that I think will eventually ring home for Chiefs fans. How about that? How about that promise for you? This is a story from Billboard. Drake has initiated legal action against Universal Music Group and Spotify over allegations that the two companies conspired to artificially inflate the popularity of Kendrick Lamar's Not Like Us. In a filing Monday in Manhattan court, Drake's Frozen Moments LLC accused UMG of launching an illegal scheme involving bots, payola, and other methods to pump up Lamar's song, a track that savagely attacked Drake amid an ongoing feud between the two stars. You're trying to strike a chord, and it's probably. Drake's attorneys accused UMG of violating the Racketeer-Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act, the federal RICO statute often used in criminal cases against organized crime. They also alleged deceptive business practices and false advertising under New York state law. The court filings are a remarkable twist in the high-profile beef between the two stars, which saw Drake and Kendrick exchange stinging diss tracks over a period of months earlier this year. That such a dispute would spill into business litigation seemed almost unthinkable in the world of hip-hop. That's the Billboard story. Part of it. Drake lost so hard that he's got his lawyers on it. Now listen, Chiefs fans, most notably Chiefs rivals, non-Chiefs fans, who somehow happen to be listening to this show tonight, and really sports fans in general. That is what you sound like when you blame the refs. It's what you sound like.
It's true.
Not Like Us was bump music on sporting event television broadcasts hours after the song was out. That was the unequivocal song of the year, culturally, musically, popularity-wise, that's the song from the beef that Kendrick clearly won. And if you get to the end of the game and you don't like the score and you have to take it to the courts, you've got to take to social media to say that the Chiefs get all the calls, that Kendrick Lamar gets all the calls. That's what you sound like. And we know that Drake will jump from team to team of whichever organization will give him a jersey, or he can sit in a Kentucky practice or meeting room or whatever in the full tracksuit. That's okay. But I do not want that behavior anywhere near or on my team. We'll take a break, come back, and talk about DJ Humphries. Don't be a Drake. Don't make it about the refs.
You're listening to The Josh Briscoe Show, Monday nights starting at 7 on your new home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
I figured that after the trade deadline, we probably weren't going to have another opportunity to meet and understand a completely new football player for the Kansas City Chiefs. But that changed this week and officially changed today. Sorry, I just got a text from a text number. It says, Drake murdered Kendrick if you actually listen to the songs. Texter, I am tempted on the way. I am tempted to call your phone number just so we can talk on my drive home. I don't think this is a Toronto area code, so I have a lot of questions from this 816 number. But that's okay. We can disagree about lots of things. Just don't say that to anyone in real life who you want to respect your opinion. Whoa, was that rude? That might have been too rude. Thank you, Texter. The thing with DJ Humphries, it's interesting, is that obviously he tears his ACL late last season, week 17. So he's not a whole lot more healed than Charles Omenihu, but he's on a similar timeline where Humphries has been cleared to play football. That's different than being cleared to start at left tackle for the Kansas City Chiefs protecting Patrick Mahomes. But he does have a higher ceiling as a pass protector than Wanya Morris does. That's understandable and relatively evident, I think. Now, we don't know, again, what level Humphries is going to rejoin in, so I'm going to make that blanket addition now, which is that Humphries has to look like a version of his former self that's not just a shadow of it, right? Presuming that he does have the physical ability and that his knee is close enough to be able to work here, I am happy with the move. I believe a couple of things about it are relatively clear. And then I have a lot of wiggle room for how it could actually play out. Step one here is that it's not my money. It's Clark Hunt's money. And the Chiefs have given out a little extra change late in the season. It's a lot of extra change. It's a $2 million deal that has a max value of up to $4.5 million, according to Ian Rappaport. That's real money for a signing just before Thanksgiving, right? I do believe that probably implies incentives for playing time, reps taken, maybe some playoff success, sort of like the DeAndre Hopkins thing, right? Hopkins, that pick goes from a fifth to a fourth. If Hopkins plays 60% or more of the snaps as a Chief, which he's currently tracking below, and if the Chiefs return to the Super Bowl. If he plays 60% of the snaps and the Chiefs go to the Super Bowl, the DeAndre Hopkins pick escalates from a fifth rounder to a fourth that goes to the Titans. With Humphries, it's all financial, so throw all the incentives in there that you want. You get a little salary cap trick here and there. Fabulous. God bless you. Glad to have it. But I do think that implies that the Chiefs told Humphries, yeah, we are going to give you every chance to win this job. And while I really do, and maybe I'm a little bit alone on an island on this, I think Wanya Morris has gotten a little bit more criticism than he's earned. Not a lot more. He's not a martyr here. But I think he's had an okay season while also playing through an ongoing knee issue that, again, Humphries will also be returning with an ongoing knee issue. But I don't know that Wanya has been healthy at any point this year. Obviously, when he exits with a knee injury, Kingsley comes in and is such an absolute disaster that he has to come back and finish the game on that knee injury. That's Wanya Morris's most impressive run of the season in my mind. I said this earlier, I don't think Wanya Morris was going to be the reason the Chiefs did not win a three-peat. I don't think he's going to tank the season. But by signing DJ Humphries, you do two things. And this is also going to sound a little bit cruel for a second-round rookie, young player who I still retain some hope for. But by signing DJ Humphries, you do two things. You raise your ceiling, protecting Patrick Mahomes' blindside in pass pro. And you take one massive step towards making sure that Kingsley Suamataia never has to be on the football field. Again, Kingsley's very young. We knew that getting up to NFL speed and developing was going to be a part of his deal anyway. the Chiefs had him out there starting in week one, and now we are talking about him being virtually unplayable. That is a brutal fall from grace. I hope that Kingsley is in a mental place where he can handle that and he can be in training camp next year competing for a starting job at least somewhere on the offensive line. But the Chiefs knew, I knew, you knew, everyone knows this. Kingsley can't be on the field right now. That's just evident by what we've seen. That's rough. But now Wanya Morris, who has gotten some reps on both sides of the line, who was moving around in training camp to be able to be in a little more of a versatile role there. Now if Juwan Taylor gets hurt and DJ Humphries is your starting left tackle when that happens, Wanya Morris can go to the right side, and I think you can get passable right tackle play. If DJ Humphries gets hurt again and Wanya Morris goes back out there, I think you'll get passable left tackle play. You need a sixth lineman who can catch a pass. We've seen Wanya Morris do that already. So it's a little bit, I don't know, air quotes here, unfair. It's a little bit unfair because Wanya is not one of the five worst performing Chiefs on this team right now, but he has a backup that is unplayable, and there was an option available that the Chiefs clearly, I believe, were keeping tabs on. I never heard any of this up until the signing or anything like that. But in retrospect now, they don't sign Donovan Smith, kind of waiting that out, and then DJ Humphries clears and they're able to bring him in right away. I have to imagine that Brett Veach has kind of had his tiered list of tackle plans throughout the season. Plan A, it's Kingsley's job. Oh God, that can't be it. Plan B, it's Wanya's job and Kingsley's a backup. Oh man, I don't know about this. Plan C, I guess it could be DJ Humphries. We'll see where he's at late in the year. And then maybe plan D's Donovan Smith if it's really bad or if Humphries isn't ready to go. And then maybe plan E, F, G, or H was David Bakhtiari, but I think it was pretty low. I think this makes total sense. And it's nice to have something that could make Mahomes' life a little bit easier. That's the upshot of this for me. The reason that I have a little bit of optimism and the reason that I am like a little excited about the move. If he can be a more consistent pass protector, he will not have the juice on the ground that Wanya Morris had. And this is a team that's been running the ball quite a bit and running the ball pretty effectively. Very effectively, really. Not with a lot of explosiveness, but efficient. If Humphries comes in here and you get Humphries, Tooney, and Humphrey, and then Smith and Taylor. If that front five can give Patrick Mahomes not even necessarily more time, going back to what Zach Eisen said with us at the beginning of this hour, if it just feels like that pocket is less muddied at all times, if Mahomes can have a little more space, or maybe just not have the clock in his head ticking quite so fast, quite so loudly, when it comes to when that pass rush may bend around the edge and bop him in the blind side, that's a big net win for this offense. So I do expect at this point Humphries to be the starter at some point. I'd be absolutely floored out of my gourd if he started on Friday. I'd be pretty surprised if he started the week after that. I think you want to give him two full weeks. And I don't know exactly. We may get a little bit of insight into this if Andy Reid talks tomorrow or if he doesn't talk until Wednesday. The role media schedule is all screwy, of course, because of the short week. Whenever we hear from Reid next, or maybe when we hear from Matt Nagy tomorrow, whoever it is, I will be really curious if we get any kind of inclination on like what the O-lineman onboarding process is, because we know that DeAndre Hopkins only has so many pages of the playbook learnt at this point, right? He's only repped so many of those plays, so the number of plays you can dip into and keep Hopkins on the field is lesser than the number of plays you can dip into and keep Juju on the field or Justin Watson on the field, because I think he knows all 400. But if you give me a chance to see Humphries stepping into that starting role and playing confident football in the offense by the time the playoffs come around, it's a weird learning curve. It's a steep learning curve. Hey, man, welcome in. You got 8 weeks. Excuse me. You have 6 weeks till week 18. You have 6 weeks to get on board, and you just got here, and we're about to play this game on Friday. You may really have 7 weeks. It's a big ask. ask, I said. It's an O-lineman. You got to have both. It's a major request to make of an offensive lineman to step in and be able to produce and get that feel and that relationship with both Joe Tooney and Patrick Mahomes, because that is part of it. Obviously, linemen aren't running routes like the receivers are, so I think it will be easier for him than it was for Hopkins or that it would be for other wide receivers. But it is still a chemistry thing. The good news is Joe Tooney and Patrick Mahomes are as good at their jobs as anyone has ever been at playing left guard and quarterback. Maybe you've had some as good. I don't know if you've ever had a whole lot better. So if anyone can speed that relationship up, maybe those are the right guys for Humphreys to slide in next to or in front of in Mahomes' case. But it's going to be fascinating to keep an eye on as the end of this regular season does come around the corner. Who's playing left tackle in the first playoff game? I think it'll be DJ Humphreys, and I think that'll be a good thing. But man, it's weird to have another addition and a new face joining the team right before Thanksgiving. We'll take a timeout, come back, and wrap things up here in the Josh Briscoe Show on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to The Josh Briscoe Show, Monday night starting at 7 on your new home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
Last segment of the show here, The Josh Briscoe Show, 96.5 The Fan. I am Josh Briscoe. James Howell on the other side of the glass. I'm gonna have either you, James, or just the collective audience help me with some homework here real quick. Because each week over on, we had Zach Eisen from Chiefs on SI, Jordan Foote from Chiefs on SI. ChiefsOnSI.com is where I do the bulk of my work in the daytime, writing over there about the Kansas City Chiefs. It's actually Kansas City Chiefs on SI, but SI.com/NFL/Chiefs will get you there. And each week, the On SI network with the reporters or publishers or whatever from each, covering each team, will do like power rankings. And we'll write a little blurb. And this week, the like prompt on the blurb is grade your team's coaching staff. You can do offense, defense, special teams. I'll say this. I don't think the Chiefs special teams have anything to ding them on, and they won a football game at the end against the Broncos. So I'm all good with the special teams. Spencer Schrader won one. Leo Chanel won one. I'm good. Butker was good before he got hurt. Arise has been, you know, was a little up and down. That's fine. But offense and defense. James, if I gave you a report card to put down, a letter grade for the Chiefs coaching staff as a whole this year, and then specifically to the offense and defensive sides for the combo of Andy Reid, Matt Nagy, and for Steve Spagnuolo and his assistants, what grades would you give out? I've got mine written down. I'll tell you what mine are. I'm not going to change them unless you convince me, I suppose.
All right. As a whole, I'd give them a solid B+. As a whole, with the special teams, I love what Spags does with the defense as well. Offensively, C+. Matt Nagy and his staff, it doesn't feel as if things are clicking quite yet.
Mm-hmm.
They've done a great job of bringing in Kareem Hunt and kind of filling in some of the gaps and some of the holes and the patchwork on the offensive line. It's been a rough go, so I have to, you know, kind of consider that as well. But yeah, I'd say like a B, you know,
yeah.
C+ maybe, not real high. And then on the defense, I really like Spags.
Love Spags.
I really, really enjoy watching his style of defense. It's very aggressive, a lot of unique packages, a lot of unique blitzes. And he blitzes at a high rate.
He sure does.
And that's exciting football to watch. They've gone through injuries just like the rest of the team. And so I would give them an A-.
Here's where I'm at. I'm a smidge more bullish on the offense than you, but we're very much of similar minds. My take here is this has overall been an A- season from an A+ coaching staff. Because, for the things you mentioned, James, the offense is out of sync. It has not quite clicked. It has not quite gelled. But they lost their number one and number two wide receivers by the end of week four. They lost the number two guy by the end of the first snap of the offensive preseason.
Mm-hmm.
The defense, I think, has some issues that we've talked about in the passing and the pass rush and in coverage. They lost their number two corner. The offense in midseason pivoted away from losing their top two wide receivers, brought back Kareem Hunt, and built an efficient offense out of it. And it is still frustrating. It is still underwhelming. It does still feel like the pieces aren't quite spinning and they're not quite scoring enough points. And the passing game is not going downfield enough. To me, that's maybe my biggest ding is in that particular realm. I don't know how much of that is coaching. I don't know if Patrick Mahomes has three better throws to Xavier Worthy. If I believe that same thing or not, I would say that I would believe the same thing. And it would just be further evidence they need to continue to push that until it begins to happen. But I just thought it was an interesting question because when I initially got the, you know, the, hey, here's the topic for the week, my first thought was like, okay, 30-some team, you know, I don't know if it's all 31 other teams, but let's say 20-some teams have, like, real decisions to make about if their head coach is good, great, getting fired, in purgatory of some sort. And for me, that part's pretty easy. This is an A-plus coaching staff because Andy Reid is in charge of the offense. He's the best offensive mind in football. Steve Spagnuolo is in charge of the defense. He might just be the best defensive mind in football. And Dave Tobe is a special teams coordinator. He may be the best special teams coordinator in football. But the specific things that haven't quite worked and my counterargument for the reasons that they should get a little more credit than they've gotten, I think becomes an interesting little math problem to begin to solve for how you look at this coaching staff, how that reflects on the rest of the team, and acknowledging how far this unit or how far all sides of this team have come since the preseason expectations of what they were going to look like. It's a fascinating group, and hopefully it's not that fascinating of a game against the Las Vegas Raiders coming up on Black Friday. Although I heard Mitch Holthus request that we call it Red Friday. I think that's fair. I mean, Red Fridays and Fridays in Kansas City are Red Fridays, but Black Friday, they call Black Friday because the numbers are going into the black financially as opposed to being in the red from the business's perspective. I'm surprised the Raiders haven't tried to make it silver in Black Friday because that also feels appropriate. But we'll all enjoy a little Friday football. Have a great Thanksgiving, Kansas City. We'll talk to you again Monday next week. I'm Josh Briscoe, show on 96.5 The Fan. Till then, bye, Mom!
Listening to the Josh Briscoe Show, Monday nights starting at 7 on your new home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.